children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
So people think that there's something wrong with these statues. They're insulting. They should be taken down. They need to go through the normal processes and not just march around acting like little petty tyrants.
If the past is anything to go by, I would not be terribly surprised if the 500th retrenches this idea that the Reformation was important for all sorts of reasons, very few of which have to do with the gospel.
What I think is often missing both in Catholicism and in modern evangelicalism is the idea of the sufficiency of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ.
Lutheran pastors from Oklahoma on their annual trout fishing retreat in Arkansas, Love Issues, Etc. Chain up, let's go!
Yay!
It is pretty shocking, even for an editorial in Scientific American, why the new science of sex and gender matters to everyone. And one wonders what new science has been done on sex and gender. I know that opinion has changed. I know that the thinking of many has changed very quickly. It's a new, well, I'm not going to call it a new reality because it's really a war on reality, but I know that opinion has changed. Even laws have changed, but has the science on sex and gender actually changed? Welcome back to Issues, Etc. on this Monday afternoon, August the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to spend the first few minutes of the show talking about Scientific American's transgender issue. Julie Kelly will be our guest from National Review Online. Dr. Ross Johnson joins us after that, an update on the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey in Texas. He's Director of Disaster Response for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Dr. David Maxwell will join us to church on this day, August 28th. He's remembering 5th century Bishop of Hippo in North Africa, the giant Augustine. And then Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. We will continue our series on the Lord's Prayer. Part two of the series today will begin with Hallowed Be Thy Name. That's coming up in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. You can join us over the next 2 hours with your questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC. And for our beloved on-demand listeners, the Issues, Etc. listener comment line is always open, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about Scientific American's transgender issue, Julie Kelly, National Review Online contributor, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Scientific American's Transgenderism Issue Only Delegitimizes Science. Julie, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Thank you for having me.
We are hearing the occasional voice from the scientific community saying, wait, let's put the brakes on a lot of this change of heart and change of mind on sex and gender, but not as much as one would think. Why isn't there more criticism of the transgender agenda from the scientific community?
Well, the reason why is because the scientific community and scientific establishment, as I refer to them, and I cover that community extensively, is highly politicized. And we see it this weekend in many climate scientists and the scientific community's response to the hurricane in Texas and blaming this not just on climate change, but somehow this is President Trump's fault. And so my argument in the piece for the Federalist is that the scientific community is just highly charged politically. They are promoting politics, and in this case, identity politics over solid science. They reach for any little crumb that they can possibly find to give a scientific mooring to their political ideology, even when none exists. And this is the case with this special issue out this month of Scientific American. And it's very alarming for several reasons that we can get into. But most of it is just this continuation of politicizing science when people need to really be fairly educated on all sides of these issues. And that's just not what's happening.
So tell us about this opinion piece, editorial essay in Scientific American.
It's an entire issue. It's called A Special Issue About Sex and Gender. There are several articles within the magazine itself that purport to, on one hand, say that there's no difference biologically or in our brains or any other way between men and women, which we know is just false. It promotes the idea of transgender youth, and there's an article that's saying that it's looking into new insights into the brain of transgender youth, which they have none. It's a purely observational project going on at the University of Washington, which alarmingly is encouraging kids aged 3 to 12 to participate in this project and be observed over time if they feel that they're the wrong sex. And any parent who would allow a 3 or 4-year-old to be part of that, I think it is nuts. So it just promotes this whole idea of that there's science-based reasons or genetic reasons for young children to feel that they are the wrong sex, and that there's some scientific basis for people who are transgendered or want to act like they're the other sex. But it's just one article after the other pushing this political narrative and very little, if any, science to back it up. The op-ed that I talk about, the opening editorial, is the most alarming because it says that there's new science about sex and gender and offers absolutely zero evidence that there is. And it's just trying to convince people that this is, you know, a scientific genetic issue when it's not.
What I'm wondering about here really is, When they're using this word science now, it sounds like they're not talking about actual research. They're not talking about any findings, any kind of reproducible experiments, even any kind of, it just sounds like we are scientists and we're here to tell you under the guise of science that we've changed our minds or that this is our opinion on sex and gender.
Exactly. They're activists who are also scientists. And, you know, when you're a scientist, then you have this, it's called confirmation bias. So you arrive at a certain conclusion already, and then you try to find whatever, as I said, crumbs or scraps or even observational or any kind of evidence to try to back it up and then convince others. So they're using their authority, which is really alarming and what I call out a lot, not just about this issue, about climate science, about biotechnology. They use their authority and their education and their title to push really dangerous political narratives that have consequences. What's interesting in the Scientific American issue is that they do have one article that talks about how the inequities in our healthcare system and how men and women are treated differently, and they give a whole litany of how women are treated differently in the healthcare system than men and how we need to be careful about, you know, things such as drug dosages between women and men and how, you know, heart issues are different in women and men. So then I argue, well, you've just told us for several articles that there are no difference, that we're all in this gender continuum. But now you're saying that there really are biological differences that could have serious health consequences. So, for example, if you're a transgender woman who goes to a doctor and you're experiencing what are usually, say, associated with men heart attack versus women, should the doctor treat you as a woman or as a man? I mean, so then in one article, they actually, belie the whole argument that they were trying to make. And that's why it's so dangerous. Because there are real life and death consequences then about how a medical community should treat someone who is biologically a man, chooses to live life as a woman, but still has health issues related to being a man. I was surprised they even included that. Maybe they didn't see how much it undermined their arguments that they were making. But they're really it's too early. If they do want to pursue any kind of scientific studies or data or long-term observational, you know, reports on transgendered people, that's fine. If you want to find the science for it, that's fine. But otherwise, don't have a magazine like Scientific American pretend that there is, you know, scientific imprimatur on this when there just isn't.
Okay, so let's talk about the difference between, and I think it really comes down, it has to come down to this, not to sound callous, but the difference between what someone thinks or feels and what is. And in this case, what someone is genetically, male or female.
Right. Well, and that's what this one of the articles says, or the one of the articles about the transgender youth says. You know, here's a boy who decided at a young age he wanted to be a girl. So he started to dressing like a girl and acting like a girl, playing with girl toys, etc. And the author, who is a scientist, says, you know, now he is choosing to live life as Sarah, as a girl, not as the boy that he seemed to be at birth. Now, this is a scientist saying this. So they don't, to them, sex now is a state of mind. He didn't seem to be a boy at birth. He was a boy at birth, and he still is a boy. If he wants to live life as a girl, that's fine. But don't try to convince the rest of us that somehow he's not a boy when he is, by every other measure, is a boy.
Let's talk with Jeff. He listens in Tampa, Florida. Jeff, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Pastor Wilkin. I have three kids, two in public high school, one that has since graduated. And when I talk to my kids about the transgender issue, inevitably or invariably what they'll tell me is, like, it's just an attention-grabbing mechanism for these kids. And I just wonder, you know, this whole issue with Scientific America, is this also an attention-grabbing mechanism for a kind of a dying publication?
It's an excellent question. Thank you very much.
You know what, Jeff? It's funny that you said that, because I have two teenage daughters, one who's in high school, and she said the same thing. Our public high school that she attends actually has a coming out day. And she has said to me over the last few years, she feels sorry for the transgender kids who all of a sudden decide to be transgender. She said, because for the most part, it's attention grabbing. And then maybe you have kids who are very sadly outcast for whatever reason. And then, you know, and this is just what I'm hearing from high school kids who view it this way. Then they're, you know, told that, well, if you become a transgender, it's widely accepted. Kids have to accept you. And, you know, this is the cool new thing to do. And so they're doing it without thinking of the long-term consequences or ramifications for it. So then the danger is to have scientists promote this from a scientific standpoint and tell kids who might be confused, who might be acting out, who, you know, are doing this for other reasons rather than it's an innate biological genetic issue, to tell them that there's some scientific reasoning behind it than trying to figure out what's at the root of it. That's what is most troubling and dangerous to kids who are vulnerable to this.
I think the thing that troubles me most is there is legitimate science to be done here, or at least research into understanding things like this, the phenomenon, the rise in people who self-identify as the opposite sex. In the past, it would have been dealt with as a mental health issue. And the people who are being cheated the most out of this are those who are suffering with this malady, because the scientists are simply humoring them now rather than viewing it as something that needs careful concern and perhaps treatment.
That's exactly right. And so now they're going to be wasting time trying to find, and if there is a scientific reason for it, then that could be part of the overall approach. But when you're talking about young kids who might be in trouble for whatever reason, and they're choosing this, whether it is a mental health issue, whether it's just a temporary emotional issue, I mean, you've got teenage kids, you know how crazy they are, or any kid from any age, you know how, you know, capricious they can be and emotional. And so instead of trying to figure this out, just writing it off, well, this is, you know, they're just born this way, is probably not the smartest approach and what's in their best interest.
You mentioned that you had contacted the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and asked for a comment about the issue of Scientific American, and they declined. Their reason for declining may be perfectly legitimate, but what should we be listening for and watching for from legitimate scientific media outlets and legitimate scientific organizations?
What you should want to hear and expect to hear is some blowback to this issue. Scientists stepping up and saying, first of all, this is, you said that there's new science here. There isn't new science. You said that there's scientific basis for this. There isn't. This is still such a new field of study that it should never be promoted in a scientific magazine this way. That's what you should hear. What you are going to hear is silence. Because in the scientific community, and this is especially true with climate, and I've watched it, if you dare to speak out about what is the politically accepted narrative of the day, you will be excoriated. You will be sent out of the tribe. So there really is very little wiggle room and tolerance for dissent, at least publicly in the scientific community. So you are going to watch this issue get out there. You're going to watch it get traction on news programs and other media coverage. You will not find, in what I'm expecting, you will not find scientific organizations or top scientists come out and say, you know, this is not accurate and this is not science. This is politics. You will not hear that.
I return to this facet of the situation again and again, and it has to do really with how quickly not only the laws have changed. I mean, that's a matter of getting the right money behind the right kind of activism, the right kind of corporate, maybe just getting someone on the right corporate boards. But how quickly minds have changed on this issue when reality is screaming the opposite. It seems as though, well, I mean, to put it quite frankly, a lot of Americans have lost their minds on this issue. How do you explain it, Julie?
It's just the culture. I mean, look, I even had some hesitation writing this because, you know, I get a lot of grief for writing about climate. You're called all kinds of names, et cetera. But when you touch a field like this and something that, you know, really impacts people at a very human level, it makes you think twice because you don't want people to think you're not compassionate. You know, I've seen young children who struggled with who they are. And I know the circumstances around those children who have. I've seen this myself with family friends. It's a very heart-rending situation. So I'm not coming at this from a lack of compassion or understanding or wanting the scientific community, as you said, to put their resources and time where it really should go, which is not promoting pseudoscience and a political agenda. It's really getting to what you're saying. What is causing the spike in this? You know, it's a culturally accepted, but there are still consequences for the individual. You know, they're not props in your little political game, leftists and progressives and Democrats. These children are not your props to make a point that Republicans are wrong, you know, how they feel about certain issues. They're using these children. If they really wanted to help and they really wanted to figure out what was causing this at certain levels, they would do it. But they're pushing this political agenda, using young, vulnerable children to their advantage. And it's really pretty outrageous. And it's just, unfortunately, it's going to take root. And these kids are going to be told that, you know, there's not something wrong with them, but what is the issue? What's causing this? They're not going to be told, well, it's in your brain. It's in your genetics. Well, we're all really met. You know, we're all just on this continuum of men and women. No one is really a woman. No one's really a man. That's what they're going to be told. And it's going to confuse them even more. So it's, I'll tell you, the scientific establishment has a lot of cleaning house to do. But a lot of them have just gone completely crazy since President Trump was elected. And I think they've gone off the rails. And I think this is an example of it.
Julie Kelly is National Review online contributor, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Scientific American's Transgenderism Issue Only Delegitimizes Science. You can read it at the Listen on Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Julie, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back on this Monday afternoon, we're going to get an update on the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. Now it's simply flooding the Houston area and southern Texas. We'll find out what the needs are right after this.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Religious liberty, Christians engaging the media, the for you of Christianity, Christian marriage, the sexual revolution, the Benedict option. These are some of the topics for the 2017 Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Pastor Marcus Zill, Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, with a prayer for this academic year at our colleges and universities.
Almighty and most merciful God, we ask your blessing on all college students, campus ministry workers, and staff who are joined together on the universities of this land, especially those who bear your name and given the recent events of unrest in Charlottesville. Grant them peace. Fill them with high ideals, give them love and goodwill to all people, and above all, keep them faithful to you and your word, even under your Son's most holy cross, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
LCMSU connects and supports Lutheran college students as they face countless challenges to their biblical worldview, doctrine, ethics, and practices. Learn more about their work at lcms.org/lcmsu, lcms.org/lcmsu.